Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really, really glad you tuned in today. So here's my question for you. When you think of authority, what comes to mind? When you think of vulnerability, what comes to mind? Well, my guest today says that authority and vulnerability aren't meant to be opposites. We're going to talk about what it means to flourish. What does true flourishing mean, and how these two components are part of the recipe for true flourishing. So honored to welcome back Andy Crouch to the program. Title of his new book is Strong and Weak, Embracing a Life of Love, Risk, and True Flourishing. Let me tell you about him. We'll get him on the show. Andy Crouch is executive editor of Christianity Today. He serves on the governing boards of Fuller Theological Seminary in Equitas. Am I saying that right, Andy? Okay. Okay,
that's correct.
Okay. Group, an organization focused on ending child exploitation in Haiti and Southeast Asia. He's also a senior fellow of our International Justice Missions Institute for Biblical Justice, good friends of ours. You can find him on the web at andy-crouch.com. Dear Andy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Susie. I am so glad to be back talking with you.
You're so funny because I told you off the air, fantastic job on the book, and then you belly laughed. Not the response I was expecting.
Well, you never know when you write a book. You never know. And it's kind of like sending a kid off to college when you publish it. It sort of goes out and does whatever it does. So
I'm so glad
that you found it helpful. It'll be fun to talk about it.
I've always likened writing books to giving birth, but I think the college analogies probably fits a little bit better. That's fantastic. So, wow, I'm so looking forward to unpacking this, Andy. And I'm wondering if you have a verse, either a life verse, a verse connected to this content, or just one you've been thinking about these days that you can share with us.
Well, the verse that I was thinking about a lot as I wrote this book, I think it would be a great place to begin, is from 2 Corinthians 12, two verses actually, verses 9 and 10, where Paul says, "I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities, for the sake of Christ, for whenever I am weak, then I am strong."
Amazing. When you think about
astonishing.
Truly, when you think about his credentials and the things that he could have listed there, I mean, he listed them elsewhere, but said, "I consider them rubbish." I mean, truly, talking about a paradigm shift, huh?
And he was writing this community, the Corinthians, who seemed to have been very impressed with people who could trot out those kind of credentials and who were very impressive speakers or had these kind of amazing spiritual experiences. And Paul actually has had some of those experiences. He kind of hints at that. But he says, "I'm not going to boast of any of that. And in fact, to keep me from being tempted to boast in those things, this thorn in the flesh, we don't really know what it was, but some kind of persistent trouble was given him, and God said, I'm not going to take it away." So it's one of those moments where you realize how revolutionary the Bible is and the gospel is, that it could take someone like Paul and turn him into someone who would say, "I'm going to boast of my weaknesses."
Amazing indeed. Title of this new book of yours, Strong and Weak, Embracing a Life of Love, Risk, and True Flourishing. Initially, it felt to me like this is a natural follow-up of your book, Playing God. Was that the intended purpose, or did this inspiration come from elsewhere?
It is very much a follow-up to Playing God, which is a book that started out really being about power and the right use of power, and ended up in a way being a book about the image of God, because I think in order to use our power well, we have to understand what it means to bear the image of God. And then as that book went out into the world and I was sort of sharing with people about it and teaching about it, this just one core idea that the image of God involves authority and vulnerability, or strength and weakness, at the same time, I realized there was a way better way of explaining it than I'd done in the first book.
Wow.
So I said to my publisher, I said, I think I need to write a little short, simple book that will get at this, I think, actually very deep idea, very powerful idea.
It is indeed. You know, with this playing God, you've come on a few times to talk about it, and I can't tell you how many times I've quoted you this question that you ask, who flourishes because I have power? It's a question that we have to ask. And first, we have to identify the fact that we all do have a measure of power. Well, once again, when you think of authority, the first thought that comes to mind is, well, I'm an employee. I don't really have any authority.
Right.
That thought absolves, we kind of abdicate ourselves even from thinking, you know what I mean, from our responsibility. So talk about true authority and what you mean there.
Yeah, so with authority, I don't just mean the position or title that you might not have, or, you know, the scope you might have in an organization or whatever. But I'm thinking about something broader. In the book, I define authority as capacity for meaningful action. When I have authority in a given setting or context, I have some way to act that will actually matter, that will be meaningful, that will have some kind of lasting effect. And not all of us do have that at work, for example. Some of us do, some of us don't. And none of us have it everywhere we go. All of us go places where really there's not that much we can do that, to meaningfully change the environment. But the flip side is, I believe every human being, even the youngest, the oldest, the most limited in certain ways, every human being, because we bear the image of God, we actually do have, in some setting, the capacity to make a meaningful difference in the world and in the lives of other people. So that's the way to think about authority, as a very broad thing in a way. Any time when I can actually act in a way that will be meaningful. And amazingly, I think that's a big part of what it is to be image bearers of God, that we have that available to us.
The passage in Scripture that says, to them who received him, to them he gave the right to become sons of God. And another translation is power to become sons of God. I remember studying that once, Andy, and it's basically delegated authority and influence. So truly, as Christ followers, to those of us who've received him, he has delegated authority and influence. Even if we don't think we have it, as image bearers and we serve a promise keeper, we have more authority probably than we realize, don't we?
Absolutely. I think we all, I would actually say, we all sort of overestimate or we overattend to our vulnerabilities, which are very real, but we're often very conscious of our vulnerabilities, even if other people may not be. But actually, we often, I think, chronically underestimate our authority. I mean, Jesus says to his disciples on the eve of his crucifixion, he says, I'm going to the Father, but you are going to do greater things than I have done. So here's Jesus, who has demonstrated a lot of authority in his earthly life, saying, actually, all that and more is, at least in principle, available to you if you abide in me and I abide in you. So we underestimate our capacity for meaningful action very often, and sometimes we avoid it because, as you said, there's kind of a responsibility that comes with it. If I don't have authority, then I don't have to worry about how things are going or what could change. But what if actually I've been given the capacity to make some kind of difference where I am? Then I have to think about what that would look like.
And that's why I love this definition, authority, capacity for meaningful action. And you define vulnerability, exposure to meaningful risk. And we're going to look at what happens when one is present without the other. But before we get there, I want to talk about this word flourishing, because when people think of flourishing, the word, things like this come to mind. Life as portrayed in the commercials on TV. Health, affluence, growth, even turning a poor neighborhood into an upper middle class community, you know. But you say it's actually none of these things. So explain your perspective.
It is. It's not any of those things. And the way we know it's not is that only one human being has lived a full human life that was everything a human life could be. And he did not live in an affluent community. I don't think his life looked much like our commercials. He didn't even have a house, apparently. He says, foxes have holes, birds have nests, son of man has nowhere to lay his head. He had moments of great success, you could say, but also moments of great loneliness, and eventually, of course, was abandoned by almost everyone who followed him. And that's the most consequential human life that's ever been lived. That's the fullness, you know, Colossians says, he's the image of the invisible God. So we have to recalibrate our understanding of what a full human life is. The life that really is life is going to look different from just the promises of a consumer society or an affluent society.
Wow, when you think about what he did, how he lived, we're flourishing because of his choices. And I think that's the broader perspective,
yes.
Isn't it? It's not just, is this disrupting my comforts or enhancing my comforts? It's his life, his sacrifice, his loneliness, all of it has impacted the kind of community you and I enjoy, the kind of life that we walk out. Isn't that true?
Wow, absolutely. And that makes me, you know, sort of it surfaces that really flourishing is not just something I'm going to have for myself, but it's something for others. Part of what makes Jesus' life so singular and so consequential is that it has affected millions, billions of lives for 2,000 years now. And a real flourishing life is actually embedded in this whole story of God's work in the world, and it participates in the story of God restoring the whole creation to himself. So, yeah, it's too, you know, we settle for way too little.
Yeah.
When our picture of what a good life would be is kind of framed by the, you know, opportunities that really only a few people have and that Jesus, I suppose, could have had but didn't take because he was after something deeper and better.
And if we are framing it continually that way, we will misinterpret the story that God's allowing us to live out. I mean, I'm thinking of Paul as you're talking too, and at one point he said that these chains are serving to advance your growth in the gospel of Jesus. I mean, his chains were benefiting me and you. And here again, if we're telling ourselves a different story, we're going to miss those opportunities, aren't we?
Exactly. And we will start moving away from risk, which is what we'll talk about probably next, which is the vulnerability that actual true flourishing requires. Also requires you to take some risks, and that doesn't happen when you are chasing a sort of thin understanding of what the good life is.
Well, now you're messing with our comfortable Christianity. And I love it. Talking to Andy Crouch, title of his new book, Strong and Weak. It's this great cover of an elephant and this little yellow. What kind of bird is that? I should know.
I don't know the name
of
the
bird.
Oh,
I'm so glad you don't know. If you would have said parrot, I should have. Anyway, subtitle is Embracing a Life of Love, Risk, and True Flourishing. More great conversation ahead. Don't go away. More with Andy Crouch when we return. Hope you're having a great day today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. So blessed to have our friend Andy Crouch back on the program, celebrating the release of his new book, Strong and Weak, Embracing a Life of Love, Risk, and True Flourishing. And this is what he says, is that authority and vulnerability aren't meant to be opposites. Strength and weakness are best when they abide together. And that's what we're talking about today. And in one of the chapters, Andy, you talk about your niece, Angela. Tell us her story, if you would.
My niece Angela is the third child of my sister Melinda. My sister has four children, and Angela is her third. And Angela was born just over 11 years ago. I'll never forget the call from my father, who was there for the birth. And my father could barely get the words out. He said, "Something's wrong with the baby." And they didn't know at that point what was wrong. But they rushed to a tertiary care hospital that could handle really complex situations, and after a number of days determined that Angela had what's called trisomy 13. So sometimes babies are born with three copies of a chromosome, trisomy, and trisomy 21 is better known as Down syndrome, but trisomy 13 is a much more disabling condition in every way, really, than Down syndrome. And it affects everything in a human body and makes it really tough on these little babies. And half of the babies born with trisomy 13 die in the first week of life. But my sister and husband said, well, if Angela's going to die, we'd like her to die at home. So they brought her home, and she didn't die. She lived for 11 years and in many ways flourished, although for all of her life, tremendous complications in her life and tremendous challenge to care for a human being with all these things that don't really work. And in December of this past year, Angela did die. And that is not unusual for children, you know, with this condition. Well, really what's unusual is that she had 11 years of amazing life. And I will say that the funeral for her, I mean, the funeral for an 11-year-old, of course, is an occasion of grief, and certainly that was the case. It was at the same time one of the most extraordinary experiences of joy and grace that I have ever experienced, because Angela's life had ended up being such a gift to my sister and her family, to our extended family, to this whole little community they live in up in northern New Hampshire, all of whom had been shaped by this very, very profoundly limited little girl. So I use that story in the book to talk about a kind of flourishing that we often don't think about, which is actually the flourishing that comes from caring for one another in our moments of great limitation, which we all have. Angela just had it in very, very visible and very comprehensive ways.
And people are changed in that culture. I mean, people are changed because it's like Christ, you know, to care for those who can't pay you back, to enter into a suffering that's not your own. And this was so huge, and I appreciate you so much telling that story, because if we miss this point, we miss something significant. We will misread those challenges that are in our midst, and I think we've already done that in society. We disregard the elderly, where in our culture they should be honored. They should be cared for, you know? And the unborn, same kind of thing. They're disregarded instead of on life it being honored. And I think we need a paradigm shift. Go ahead, Andy.
Well, and the terrible reality is that with our medical technology, we are able to create a kind of illusion of control in our own lives, and kind of an illusion of health, I might even say. And the flip side of that is that when parents get a prenatal diagnosis of a condition like this, very often doctors put tremendous pressure on those parents to terminate the pregnancy. And that's the case for something as difficult as trisomy 13. It's the case for Down syndrome, which, you know, Down syndrome poses real challenges for families and the individuals who have it. But it is also, it can be the most astonishing gift. And the vast majority of parents who carry those pregnancies to term and raise those children say it's the best thing that's happened to their family. And because we're able to diagnose these things, and it's just going to get better and better, we're going to get better and better at it, more and more people are going to feel the pressure to say, well, you know, this is a life that isn't really worth living. And it couldn't be further from the truth. It's not easy. It's really hard, but it's really good. Mm. And, I really fear we are losing at all the extremities of life, our youngest, our most sick and vulnerable, our oldest. We're actually missing out on what a flourishing human community is, which is one that can care for all of us in those moments, which we're all going to have at some point in our life, where we aren't, you know, the picture of health, this narrow picture of health.
Well, flourishing involves sacrifice and inconvenience, but that is when we're closest to the heart of Christ. I remember when and forgive me, friends who listen regularly, you know my story, but as a young mom with three little boys battling Lyme disease, there was a point in the disease where I was so desperately sick that the picture of family life for us was my hubby bringing three little boys, and each were carrying. One had a napkin, one had the knife and the fork, and he was always the one that could carry it because he wouldn't stab anybody, you know. One had my plate of food. And I just remember crying out to my girlfriend saying, this is so wrong. I'm supposed to be taking them to the park. This is not right. And I was just lamenting. And she said, you listen. She said, in a day when young men do not know how to treat young women, they're getting a front row seat of their dad loving and serving his wife. And it knocked me. She schooled me, and I needed it. And I got to tell you, these boys are men now, and they do know how to care for their wives. And I hated that. I hated being in that place, but something got in us as a family as a result of it, you know?
And, you know, I don't think any of us have to go very far in our own lives, and certainly not in the communities around us, to be connected to experiences of vulnerability like that. I mean, right across the street from our family is a family that's lived with very much with what you described, with Lyme disease. And it's all around us. It's in our own stories. And we make such a mistake when we try to paper it over, cover it up, move on too quickly from the things that are the real sources of our potential love for one another and ability to receive love from one another. And I think, I will say my own family of origin has been so healed in certain ways by this experience of these 11 years of having this very vulnerable person that we had to care for and we all had to sacrifice for her. My sister and her husband, of course, bore by far the most, but all of us were shaped by it. And then the siblings, as you say, the kids, actually, the other three children, my own children, they are so much better for having been part of this story. I mean, infinitely better.
Hmm. We just have a few minutes before we take our bottom of the hour break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the juxtaposition of authority and vulnerability and the absence of one in the presence of the other. But if you would say a few words, Andy, about why we hate vulnerability so much. I mean, we want, but it's like an illusion of control and strength, and we fight for it. But really, life is so much more fragile than we even know, unless we've experienced a death in the family. But speak to our just aversion to vulnerability.
Boy, I wish I knew. All I know is that we have it. Psychologists call it loss aversion or risk aversion. It's been demonstrated in, even in experiments, that we fear loss much more than we want gain, even. And there's something about the human condition that we avoid it. And maybe it's partly because of all the creatures on the earth, we're the only ones who can fully anticipate how mortal we are, how dependent we are. And so when the serpent in the garden whispers, you know, if you eat this fruit, you'll be like God, and you shall not surely die, which is basically what he's saying, you'll have lots of authority and very little vulnerability. There's something about human beings, it goes to the heart of the fall, I think, that we think, oh, I think I'd like that. And so we pursue control, and control really is authority without vulnerability. Even though it's an illusion, we can't actually have it. It isn't. Whatever authority we have is only a gift from God, and yet it's something bent. And if I understood that really, I would understand the mystery of the whole thing, and I don't.
And that would be your next book.
Yeah.
When you think about it, it's like what we see, and we'll talk about this on the other side of the break as well, but we see people who suffer exploitation, who are so profoundly vulnerable, but what it makes us, our instinctive response is to shore up our life so that doesn't happen to us, not to enter in and maybe be a voice for them, but we want to build higher fences, and you know what I'm saying? We want to do whatever we can to protect against it.
But. Yes, and we pull back, we withdraw. Yeah. It's the great temptation.
Indeed.
And if you're privileged enough, you can choose to opt out of risk, but it's not the best way to live.
And right there, we're going to pause and talking to Andy Crouch. Title of his book, Strong and Weak, Embracing a Life of Love, Risk, and True Flourishing. I just got to say, this book will mess with you in the best way. Got four copies. I give Andy this full hour, so you can email me, though, to get into the drawing. Susie@myfaithradio.com. Put strong and weak in the subject line. Email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Give me your mailing address. If I just get an email from you with no mailing address, I hate to tell you this, but I can't email a book. Wish I could, but I have to mail it, hard copy. You know what I mean? So mailing address, strong and weak in the subject line. You'll go in the drawing, and a few of you will get a copy of Andy's great book. More with Andy Crouch when we return. Tuning in today, I'm Susie Larson. This is of The Promise. Love talking with Andy Crouch. Title of his new book, Strong and Weak, Embracing a Life of Love, Risk, and True Flourishing. Talking about the juxtaposition of authority and vulnerability and how one without the other is not a recipe. It's not a culture for flourishing. I'm just loving this conversation. I got to tell you, in the cover of the book is an elephant and this yellow bird, and I think somebody found out.
What the
Way to go. What is this thing anyway?
So it's a cattle egret. They're these birds that live on the backs, or they spend a lot of their times on the back of elephants and I think other ruminants in Africa. And they eat, you know, like little bugs that might otherwise live on the elephant's back, and they sort of keep it clean. And so it's this beautiful relationship between this huge, massive creature, this elephant, and this little bird. And so it was just the perfect image of kind of a relationship that has both strength and weakness in it.
Well, hats off to the book cover designer, I just got to say. That's fantastic. Okay, so for those who just tuned in, let's redefine authority and vulnerability. Authority, capacity for meaningful action. Did you want to say a bit more about that?
Yeah, so as we said earlier, not just a title, not just a position, but any time that you can actually make a difference in some way. And we all have some authority, and not all of us have, none of us have all that we would want. We all have limits to our authority, but we all have some place. You know, it could be the life of a child or a family member or friends or neighbors or a workplace sometimes where we do have authority.
And then vulnerability is exposure to meaningful risk. Did you want to say more there?
Yeah, and, you know, I will say that I want to think about vulnerability a little more broadly than sometimes we mean that word. Sometimes we use it just to talk about a kind of emotional openness or transparency, and that can be a meaningful risk in perhaps often is. But I'm thinking more broadly. You know, I was thinking right before the break, we were talking about how we have this risk of withdrawing from the world, actually, or danger of withdrawing from the world. And I heard from our mutual friend Gary Haugen of International Justice Mission years ago about a trip he took to the nation of Haiti with a couple of friends. And they came home, and this friend called him up a couple days later and said, "I'm so grateful that you took me to see the needs in Haiti." He said, "It was really helpful, and I've torn up my passport, and I'm never leaving the United States again." In other words, he said, "Thank you so much for showing me how good life is here, and I'm never leaving again." Mm. Now, you know, so this man was exposed, apparently, to the real risks of life outside of our safe, developed world. And he decided, "I don't want any of that." Now, I don't know this person, but he may be very emotionally open and available and so forth. But he's decided he's never again going to take that risk. And so I'm thinking about vulnerability as the whole range of things we can do that open ourselves up to the possibility of loss. And that could be emotional loss. It could be financial loss. It could be even loss of reputation or, you know, and all those things actually are places where flourishing can happen, because I think the truth is, whenever you think, if you think about the most meaningful times in your life, it was a time when you both had some capacity to meaningfully act and there was something really at stake. It wasn't just a game. It wasn't easy or safe, but there was some real risk happening. And I think that's where real life happens.
And it's something we're made for as Christ followers and image bearers, because, you know, Jesus did not consider equality with God a thing to be grasped, right? He actually leveraged his status in a way that cost him so you and I could benefit. That is part of the Christ following life, isn't it?
It completely is. And we have this idea, I think, you know, it goes all the way back to the serpent who says, "If you eat this fruit, you'll be like God, and you shall not surely die." And what the serpent insinuates there is God is all authority with no vulnerability, and you can be that too. But we learn in Christ that that actually was never really true of the true God. The true God, for one thing, made a world with creatures like us in it who could actually turn against him, rebel against him, ultimately could crucify his son. And God was always willing to take that risk. And Jesus did not consider equality with God something to be grasped or exploited. Instead, he's willing to empty himself for others flourishing. And this is the really important thing, I think. Other people don't flourish unless I'm willing to take a risk. Because if I'm not willing to take a risk, what I will always be trying to do is control my situation. I'll be trying to manage my vulnerability so tightly that I won't leave freedom for other people to take action or to flourish. And so, you know, I could have a nice, safe, good life perhaps for a while if I pursue control, but other people around me are not going to grow, and they're not going to get the opportunity to be the image bearers they were meant to be.
So take it even to a greater extent. What happens when you have authority without vulnerability? Play that out for us, and even how it's playing out in the earth today.
Yeah, well, the ultimate example, in a way, probably several kind of ultimate versions of this, when you get up to a national level or a kind of geopolitical level, it's tyranny. So dictators are people who seek to completely control the political environment that they're in. You know, when you think of the dictatorship of North Korea or many authoritarian governments around the world, what are they looking for? They're looking for lots of authority for the leaders, but very little vulnerability for the leaders. But the thing is, this always comes at the expense of other people ending up with no authority and with lots of vulnerability. Dictatorships never produce flourishing whole economies or countries. Then we get versions of it, unfortunately, even in our own politics in the United States, which is politically more healthy in some ways. But you have to admit, I mean, more than one presidential candidate kind of can seem to promise lots of authority to people and sort of flaunt authority and power and capacity, but not necessarily offer a lot of risk or call people to meaningful risk. So, you know, that's one big way it plays out, is leaders who sort of take all the authority for themselves and offload all the vulnerability onto other people. And that's the essence of injustice. An unjust system is a system where a few people get to have authority without vulnerability at the price of most other people in that system having all the exposure to risk any human being does, but no ability to meaningfully care for their neighbors, the world around them, and to take part in the flourishing they were meant for.
Well, when you think about the huge contingent of Americans right now who are so angry, so frustrated with the political process, in some ways very legitimate, but other ways so scary to me, because the pendulum has swung to such a degree that suddenly, well, I know we're supposed to care for other people, but that doesn't matter right now, because now it's about self-preservation. Anytime it becomes about self-preservation, lots of people pay a price, don't they?
That's right. That's when we grab for control, or we grab for or follow that leader who promises us, if you empower me, I will rescue you from risk. And it comes out of real suffering, and it comes out of real deprivation of authority, too. The people have experienced, you know, people have lost jobs. The last 8 years have been especially difficult in this country for a lot of working people. And so you can understand why, but the problem is it's not going to work. Authoritarianism is the most powerful form of government until it collapses, and it always collapses because it doesn't reflect how human beings are meant to live. And so these promises are so seductive, and the sort of posturing of certain candidates are so kind of extraordinary, but they aren't going to be able to deliver. And they'll actually leave us less able to meet our common challenges than we were before.
Well, you touched on this, but if you would unpack it a bit more, talk about the vacuum of vulnerability without authority, and give us maybe some examples of what's really happening in the world today in that regard.
Mm. Well, in some ways, the ultimate example of vulnerability without authority would be to be a slave. So a slave is someone who has no capacity for meaningful action. You know, something I learned recently, or was reminded of recently, was that in Jesus' time and in the time of the early church in the Roman Empire, the word person, the Latin word persona, which we get person from, only applied to masters, heads of households. Only they were considered persons, and their property, which included, of course, women as well as slaves, weren't even considered persons. So when you are completely owned by another in an unjust system, then you have no authority, no independent capacity to act on your own. And yet, as we know, if someone will own you and exploit your labor, they will exploit potentially anything else that they like about you. And we know that 30 million people, perhaps, between 20 and 30 million people today are effectively slaves around the world. So that's the most extreme form. On the other hand, all of us have at some point been in this kind of corner of having a great deal of vulnerability in a given situation, lots of risk, but no ability to change our situation. We've all been that sick or that stuck or that at the mercy of someone else who is making very unjust decisions. I was just walking around thinking about a friend of mine whose spouse left without really even any opportunity to grow or learn, just left, and wow, at that moment, you are totally vulnerable, and there's nothing you can do. Mm. So we've all been there, but some people, unfortunately, and whole communities, spend their whole lives or spend generations in that condition of vulnerability without authority. And I think really the name of that, when it gets entrenched over time, is poverty.
So, Andy, when you walk through such a hardship as your friend, and I've got loved ones who've been in the same place, and it's absolutely gut-wrenching because it's like inflicting pain without any say on your part. You're on the receiving end of it. when you walk through that, you never want to feel that again. And so, again, the pendulum will swing to, I'm going to reach for some kind of control. How do you marry the two? How do you embrace this picture, this strong and weak picture, in a way that's Christ-like, where we flourish even amidst times of vulnerability?
I think the great hope at those moments is that, is first of all, that Jesus visited that part of life as well. So, you know, if ultimate reality, if the ultimate God had never known that, we would really be stuck, and all we could do would be to try to claw our way out of it, I suppose. But because Jesus actually went there, and on the cross, you're physically immobilized, you're exposed to shame. The Romans crucified their victims naked, which is a deep kind of human vulnerability. Jesus went to that place, and so there's nothing, no level of shame, no level of immobility, you might say, that Jesus didn't experience, and he went all the way to death. And that is, I think, has to be where we begin, is just realizing Jesus has gone here. Jesus can be present even in this. And then I think the great challenge in all of the suffering that marks every human life is how not to flee it, but to go through it to a deeper and better kind of authority that comes on the other side of it. When you try to just reduce vulnerability or reduce suffering in your life, you almost always have to do that by exploiting other people or by insulating yourself from other people. But when you realize Christ went there, went all the way to death, and is now raised with all authority, could it be? But by the way, he still has the wounds.
Yeah.
He's still wounded. So he didn't remove the marks of his suffering. When we see him in the New Jerusalem, he's going to look, it says in Revelation, like a lamb that had been slaughtered. That's kind of an astonishing phrase from Revelation. And he holds on to all that vulnerability and yet rules and reigns with it. And I think actually that's for us too, that there's a way, if we don't hide from or run from the pain of our reality, that there's also a kind of spiritual authority that can come. And this is probably what Paul is getting at when he says, I'm going to boast in those things because, I mean, he even uses the word, at least in that English translation I read from at the top of the program, calamities. I'll boast in my calamities because Christ's power is actually made known in those very things.
Maybe you've gone on a mission trip before. We went with IJM to Guatemala. I remember just the precious village people just saying, you came here. You didn't have to come here, but you came here. And I truly think that Jesus didn't have to, but he did. He entered into a suffering that's not his own so that we could prevail and flourish with him. And he calls us to do the same. When we come back, I'd love for you, Andy, to talk about the great danger of the affluent life in the West, and that is to withdraw, and how God has really called us to engage. We're going to talk more about that with Andy Crouch when we return. Life on earth is short, eternity is long, and we're here for such a time as this for a very distinct purpose. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Andy Crouch today about his great book, Strong and Weak, Embracing a Life of Love, Risk, and True Flourishing. And you'd mentioned in the book that the greatest danger of life in this affluent West is our desire to withdraw from both authority and vulnerability. And I think you really touched on it, Andy, even in this political race, that the pendulum is so swung that it's like, I'm just going to hand it all over because I just want to stay wrapped up in bubble wrap. I mean, that's what you kind of get the feeling. But we're made for better things than that. So speak to that, if you would.
Yeah, there is this temptation to withdraw from responsibility, really, for the world and the risks that come with responsibility. And for most of human history, it's not a temptation people have been able to really indulge because you walk out your door and it's risky out there. But we live, some of us do, many of us do, and you don't have to be, you know, super wealthy by any means. Just living in America, almost anywhere in America, insulates you to an astonishing degree from risk. And so there is this possibility of living a life that's actually very protected. I think one of the best ways to do this, not really best, but You know, if you really want to do this, one way to do it is video games, which give you this simulation. Like when you're playing a video game, you feel like you're really living, like you're taking risks. You actually have developed maybe some skill and authority, but you're actually in your parents' basement.
And, and you're 40 years old.
Well, and you're not taking real risks. It's all simulated, but it's such an effective simulation. This, you know, video games are a bigger industry than movies because movies are passive. But video games give you this sensation of action, but not the reality of the risk that's out there in the world. So in our family, we're raising our kids in a suburban community that is a wonderful place to live in many, many ways. But we've told our kids over and over, the only thing money can buy is bubble wrap. money is not good for many things, but wow, it can insulate you from not just risk, of course, but in the long run, if you imagine being encased in bubble wrap, you wouldn't be able to feel anything. You're not able to move freely. And oddly enough, our sort of privileges and just the comfort and safety of much of what it's like to live in America actually insulate us from the action we were made for and the risks we're meant to take. And it's not a good place to live.
Okay, and Andy, and people know that, listen often enough, that fear is something I've battled my whole life, and I've come a really long way, but for good reason. I was jumped and beat up when I was a kid by some big teenage boys and some other things. But truly, I'm just like so determined to wrestle that thing to the ground, and I don't want it to keep me from living. But you think about what people are seeing on the news. Fear is a natural response. And maybe somebody's listening today going, well, what am I supposed to do with that fear and the very real threat that I'm seeing on the news? What is my call as a Christian? What do you say?
Well, it's not wrong to be afraid. I think it would be very odd to you'd have to be wrapped in a lot of bubble wrap to know the reality of our world and not feel fear. Mm. That's completely appropriate in a way. But I think that we are given power, especially if we have Christ's Spirit living in us, to not be governed by our fear, not be ruled by our fear. And that means, you know, I feel this when I visit friends who live in urban neighborhoods that are far more dangerous than my own, or when I travel to countries that are far more dangerous than where I live. I feel fear, for sure. And I think about the risks, but I believe that there is such blessing on the other side of stepping through that fear prayerfully and carefully in a way, you know, with proper prayer and care, that I'm willing to do it. So this is not about not being afraid. If you are vulnerable, you are going to feel fear. You're going to feel a sense of risk, and that's actually essential to the flourishing you will not find if you start to build your life around self-protection. And unfortunately, so much of what we build our lives around, often without realizing it, is insulating ourselves. But the problem is you don't just insulate yourself from the bad stuff. You insulate yourself from the incredible stuff, the beauty, the power of God that's actually available in those moments of great, even great terror and great peril. And if you insulate yourself from the fear, you'll also actually insulate yourself from the power of the Spirit and the presence of God.
And this is such a radical message, Andy, because it really does disrupt our Americanized version of Christianity, because you're talking about biblical Christianity here. I mean, you really, really are. But it's amazing how our culture has kind of fossilized some of our comforts and justified them. Do you know? Speak to that, if you would.
Well, I've been sharing some of these ideas with pastors, and one of the frustrations pastors have is people often come to church, and the specific thing they're looking for from their church is to feel safe. And so you have whole Christian institutions that are asking of their leaders, you know, help us feel comfortable, help us feel, you know, we feel very threatened perhaps out in the wider world, but keep us safe. And you just think about, did Jesus ever offer that? You know, did any of the apostles, who all of whom ended up one way or another being martyred, did any of them think that was what the Christian life was supposed to be about? And I think one of the great challenges of church leaders is that they're trying to, often they really do want to call people to real meaningful risk for the sake of our neighbors, for the sake of the gospel, but they're actually inhabiting and given charge of institutions whose sort of underneath the surface, the purpose is let's create a comfortable environment for a certain kind of person, a certain kind of family to feel protected. And that is just, it's the death of the gospel right there.
Well, talk about atrophying your spiritual muscle. You just sit there and I'll just feed you and tell you all the things you want to hear. I mean, Lord, have mercy. You know, we have Nick Ripken on pretty regularly. He's an expert on the persecuted church, just a seasoned, dear, dear man of God. But when he and his wife, they'll go to Walmart or Costco or Target, he'll be like, honey, do you mind if I just go off for a little while? And he looks for people from other countries, and he knows so many. He knows so much about different countries because he's ministered all over the world. But he'll come back and say, I met people from 26 different countries. And he'll ask him, has anybody welcomed you to the country yet? And he strikes up conversations and just loves on them. And he says, you know, yes, it's a risk. But he said, I want to know these people. I want to be Christ to them. And you know, I just think it's such a beautiful invitation of engagement. And that's really what you're talking about, right where we live or wherever God invites us to let faith trump fear and be vulnerable and use the influence and the freedom he's given us, right?
And that's so beautiful how, you know, he's taken some huge risks in his life, I'm sure, in the places he's traveled, but it's actually now increased his authority. You describe his sort of freedom and ability to connect with people and even just to recognize, oh, I bet that person's from such and such a country. He actually has more authority, more capacity for meaningful action because he took a meaningful risk. And that's a beautiful thing. When you take real meaningful risks. We're not talking about just driving without your seatbelt or stupid stuff. You know? When you actually take a meaningful risk, it increases your capacity for meaningful action. They go together. They're not opposites. It doesn't rob you of capacity. It actually increases it. And I do like that muscle image. I mean, that's good. It builds your sort of, you've got more kind of fortitude and more strength and more agility, I would say, to respond to the world as it comes to you.
And you think about stewarding a heart of love and saying, you know, if I perish, I perish because I'm here to be the hands and feet of Christ. There's so much more we could talk about in this little book with the elephant and the yellow bird. I love this book. Would you do us a favor, Andy, and pray that there would be an awakening? I'm just so burdened for the American church. Awaken us, oh God. And would you pray for that?
I will. Father, thank you so much that all this is undergirded by your Son, who took a risk, the great risk, and emptied himself and took on the form of even of a slave, and now is Lord of Lords. And God, we pray that your church in this country would live under his servant lordship and live with his kind of abandonment of privilege and power, and also live with his true power, his ascended power that still has wounds but also brings flourishing wherever his name is proclaimed. Make us part of that story, God, instead of our little small stories. And thank you for rescuing us from what we would have made of the world. In Jesus' name.
Andy Crouch, I can't even express to you how grateful I am for your voice in the kingdom of God. And just thank you for how you've stewarded the insights God's given you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Susie. It's been a gift, as always, to be with you. Thank you.
Always love talking with you as well. Title of his book, Strong and Weak, Embracing a Life of Love, Risk, and True Flourishing. We've gotten a few emails. Love to hear from you. Susie@myfaithradio.com. Put Strong and Weak in the subject line. Include your mailing address. Your name will go into a drawing, and a handful of you will get a copy of this book. I'm telling you, it's a great book, and it'll mess with you in the best way. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In just a bit, you'll find a podcast to today's program on our website at myfaithradio.com. Would love for you to be a radio missionary. Send this conversation I just had with Andy out to friends, family, loved ones with a click of a button. You can do that by email, Twitter, Facebook. Coming up in hour two, I'm joined by Jim Gash. He followed God's leading to Uganda and used his position as an American lawyer to free a young man wrongly imprisoned for murder. It is a riveting story. You'll want to make time to hear that one if you can. We'll be back in just a moment.